I'm not even 100% sure what we're going to talk about, because she can talk about so many different things, and she's the voice of compassion. So I'm so excited to welcome her back to the show. So that's going to be coming up a little bit later on in the hour. Believe me, you're going to feel like, oh my gosh, where has this woman been in my life? And I'm so grateful to have her in my life. But before that, let me just welcome all of you. We're winding our way through this amazing month, April, Autism Awareness, Autism Action, Autism Appreciation, and Autism, did I say action? I've lost myself in my A words. There's a lot of A words this month, April, Autism, just to start. It's been such a privilege during this month to share with you so many amazing guests, so many amazing experts. And I got to tell you, we're only scratching the surface. We could only fit that many people in. So, don't forget that today we have Jen Yakos. Tomorrow, for the first time ever on our show, we have Abby and Christine Romeo. They are the mom and daughter featured on Autism on the Spectrum US. I promised that I would tell people that they are currently casting for the next season. If you know somebody who is interested in being a part of that cast, you can send the request my way and I will forward it on, because it's such a wonderful opportunity to date and show the world your stuff and potentially find love. I know Abby did, and we're going to talk with her tomorrow about some of her favorite topics, about David, about mermaids and hats. She makes amazing hats, you guys, that you'll want to know about, and we'll talk with her mom too. Her mom's a really incredible person that I didn't know that I knew from way back in the day. More on that later. But then on Monday, we're back for the last 2 days of this amazing month. Don't worry, we got May coming, and there's good stuff coming in May. But on Monday, we'll have Vince Redmond, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist. Vince has been a regular on Autism Live from the beginning, but he hasn't been with us for a long time, and he's going to join us to talk about some of the emotional impacts and ways of dealing as a caregiver, as a parent, with some of the really more taxing things that happen that aren't things that everybody always thinks when an autism parent talks about the stress that they're under, that that's because of the individual on the spectrum. It's not. It's having to, you know, find the fortitude to be the best possible ally to fight with insurance and, you know, services and blah, 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 and school, all those things. That's the tough part, because we never want to let our kids down. That's the emotional part. And Vince is going to talk with us about all that. And then on Tuesday, Dr. Grant Pichet will be back for Ask Dr. Doreen. And we will be talking specifically about building language. And that will close out the month of April. Don't forget, all of the shows that we've been doing, they're available. You can watch the full video and audio on our YouTube channel. It's also there on Facebook Live too and on Twitter, but you can also download them as a free podcast on any of the podcast platforms. We encourage you to do that. Don't forget that when you get the podcast, you're getting the audio only version so that you can take it with you, and that there will be advertisers on there. That's what makes it a free download for you. If you find that you're listening and you're like, I just really want to have it ad free, we do have that mode for you. You pay a small fee. I believe it's $5 a month on glow.fm/autismlive. When you sign up for that, not only do you get the ad free version of Autism Live, but you also get the ad free version of Ask Dr. Doreen and literally everything that we do here at the Autism Network. So glow.fm/autismlive, but find us where you enjoy getting your podcasts from. We hope that you'll tune in. And we also hope that you'll like, share, review, send us questions, refer people, all of those things. We want to be here as a resource for information and inspiration. And the more people that you tell or tell about us, then the more people can find us, and then we get to do more shows, and it just feeds upon itself. So we hope you'll be a part of that. That's a wonderful thing that you can do for us. So we are going to get to my guest in just a few minutes, but we always like to share the jargon of the day. This is when we take on one word, one phrase, one acronym. We try to figure out what in the hey, nani, nani, are those experts talking about? why did they bother making this jargon term? And what does this have to do with my life and how I want my life to go? Right? I believe that for the first time in 14 years, we are doing the jargon term today. And I must say, I'm doing it being dragged with, you know, kicking feet, because it's one of those terms that I was like, how often is this going to come up with a parent? I really don't like to waste your time with terms that I don't think that are going to be of use to you. But I actually think more and more people are using this term. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I also know that there are people that are watching that are in university programs and that it helps them to be able to find things. So here we are. Here we are. We're going to do this jargon term today. And I do think it's going to be of use to you if we do it right. Let's hope we get it right. So today's term is celeration. Now, I know I literally was like, are we juicing celery? No. We're going to give you the actual definition, and then we're going to give you another definition, and then we're going to see if I can't explain this in a way that makes it beneficial to those of us that have wonderful family and friends and loved ones on the autism spectrum. Okay, so celeration, our actual definition, the rate of change in the frequency of a behavior. I said it slowly so that I get my own head wrapped around it. The rate of change in the frequency of a behavior. This term is derived from acceleration and deceleration, which refer to increases and decreases in the rate of change. And I didn't quote who this is from. I believe it was just online. I don't even know if I knew who it was from. It's a pretty, you know, out there term, definition. So I think we can all grab a hold of acceleration and deceleration and notice that, oh, the word there is celeration. So that part of the word is the rate of change in the frequency of a behavior. Hang on to that. Hang on for dear lives. Let's move on to our working definition. So this one, how a rate of behavior changes over time. So we're kind of backing up and looking at a behavior over a time. Acceleration chart is used to show how behavior over time. Looking at trends can help predict behavior. Is the learning accelerating or decelerating? Okay, so let me propose this to you. That when you're doing ABA and insurance is paying for ABA, first of all, people who do ABA, they love data. They love data, but they tell me that they love data because it shows, is the thing working? It's not just my imagination. Is what we're doing working? I love that because if what we want to see is progress, it's important. People use the term KPIs, right? And all these different things, even in business now, everybody's looking, is it working? Is it working? And the whole reason for that is if it's not working, that we want to change something so that we see real, meaningful results. Now, for me, this starts with first looking at what kind of a result are you looking for? What is it that you want? Now, when I talk to parents, a lot of times you guys tell me, I want to see more communication from my child. I want to participate in more communication with my child, right? Now, for some people, that's spoken language. For other people, that's, you know, functional communication. Communication entails a lot of different things. So when we're making a chart, we could be looking at lots of different elements of communication. Let's just for a moment, let's introduce another jargon term that we've done before on the show, manding. So manding is when you request something. So when a child says juice because they want juice, that's manding. And eventually we want that sentence to be longer. I want juice. I want more juice. I want more juice, please. Right? And that can be spoken. That could be signed. That could be, you know, punching words on an iPad. So they start with juice and then it's want juice. And then it's, I want juice. I want more juice, right? All of those things. It's all still manding, right? And we're just constantly pulling more language, more communication out of the mand. So we would set a thing in the beginning saying, maybe we want to see just more manding. And, you know, the person who's designing the program says, you know, a one-word manned counts, and we're just going to see how often this individual is manding. And we set the criteria that when this person mans, that they are going to be given reinforcers. And with a manned, if you're asking for something, generally it's that you get the thing that you asked for. So if you ask for juice, we can say, good job, good talking. But that's not the real reward. That's just the praise that's coming with it. The real reward would be getting juice to go with that, right? So when they're doing ABA programs, they're tracking all of this, and they're tracking how many times during an hour does this individual man. And that becomes a point on a graph, right? But over time, what we want to see is words and manding trending up, that the learning of that man is actually accelerating, which we would see on acceleration charts, because we're seeing the trend of that behavior over the time. And we could look at that and go, they're definitely doing more manding than they were doing a week ago. And then maybe we look at it over a month and go, look at how the manding went up so much. At the same time, when they're teaching manding, they're almost always charting challenging behaviors. And they would set parameters around that, that maybe this individual is throwing tantrums. And in the beginning, they would, you know, see how many tantrums are we throwing a day? And maybe it's 20 tantrums. They also might be looking at the duration of those tantrums. So there'd be one chart showing how many tantrums per day, and another chart showing the duration of those tantrums, right? But then we introduce the manding, right? And as the manding goes up, what we will see is that there will be a deceleration of the tantruming. Because if I can get what I want by asking for it and I actually get it, then I don't have to tantrum as much. So we would see the deceleration on the acceleration chart of that behavior, of the challenging behavior of throwing tantrums. We would see that go down. I would also love to see that the length of time is going down too. And that would tell me that as the manding goes up, the need to do that is going down. If it looked differently, then it's not the child or the learner, who could be a teen or an adult. I don't mean to just say child. It's not their fault. We need to change something. And maybe we need to make it more reinforcing to mand, or maybe we need to not have it be a word. Maybe it needs to be even the production of sound and pointing, that's where we start, because we want them to have success. And we finding the place where we want to pull it out. You know, I said, so they say juice, and then we say more juice, and I want juice. But maybe we need to start at the point where they're saying juh, right? That's the place that we start. And then we move from ja to ja-s, ja-oos, ja-oos, right? So we finally get to juice. So I don't love the data. I don't want to track data. I had to sometimes as a parent. But the only way I could care about it was by saying, this will help me to know, is what we're doing working? I also say to parents, videotape, 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 because sometimes it's hard for us to see that there was progress. And you go back and look 2 weeks ago and go, oh my gosh, there's been a change and I can see it. But insurance loves it when it's on a graph. Your ABA people love it when it's on a graph, because they can get really granular with it, and they can go back in and they can change something. I know it feels like it's so uncompassionate, right? And one of the things we're going to talk about with Jen Yakos is compassionate ABA. It feels cold. Graphs, it feels so cold. But if you think about it and take it down to the level of, why is this important? Because if we teach something to somebody over and over and over again, and we're not doing it right, and they just continue to not make progress, it's the same as somebody beating their head against a wall. It's not effective. It's not kind. It's not efficient. It's not kind. So the kind thing to do is notice. And I remember as a teacher, we teach something and then we would assess, did it work? Right? Okay. It didn't, they didn't learn that. So now I got to go back and teach again. That is the kind thing to do. Not go, well, they didn't learn it. I guess they were lazy. Oh, that's not a teacher. Teacher says, I'm going to teach this to you. So I'm going to see, are you getting it? Okay, you didn't get it this time. Let me try it a different way. It's never the student's fault. And it's not the teacher's fault, but the teacher has to notice, is it working? Acceleration, looking at acceleration on a acceleration chart shows you, is it working? Are we trending up? Or in some cases, are we trending down? Because that's what we want to see. But if we're flatlined or we're not going the right direction, we have to change a variable and help this individual to be able to learn the skill that we think is important for them. So acceleration, when you hear it, don't freak out. I have come to think of it as celebration, because it's going to show us if the progress is there or if something's stopping us from getting to the celebration, we can change it. And then it will show up on the acceleration chart and then we will celebrate. Hopefully that makes sense for you guys. I can't believe it wasn't that bad. I hope you can see why this term is kind of important. All right. We got an amazing guest for you. We're going to pause for these messages and then we're going to be back with Jen Yakos. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for joining us during Autism Awareness Acceptance Action and all the other A's this month on the Autism Network. Here on Autism Live, we've got a great week for you. On Monday, Lisa Ackerman, founder of TACA, the Autism Community in Action, is going to be with us, and she is always amazing. Then on Tuesday, Ask Dr. Doreen. Dr. Doreen Grampuchet will be here, and her very special topic for that day will be aggression. If you're having anything going on in your home or you're concerned about aggression, make sure you tune in for that show. Then on Wednesday, another wonderful autism expert, Marcy Fibro, is going to be here with us. We can't wait to be joined by her. On Thursday in our lineup, Jennifer Yakos, who has been on our shows for many years, but we haven't seen her in a while, she is going to be here talking about some of the new exciting things going on at CARD. We cannot wait to have that hour. Then on Friday, for the very first time, those of you who love the show Love on the Spectrum on Netflix, the U.S. version, we are welcoming Abby Romero along with her mom, Christine. We know that a lot of you are fans of both of them. They're going to be joining us on Friday for the very first time. So excited about that. We hope that you'll tune in all week long. If you miss any of the shows, you can catch them easily in podcasts. And you can check out all of the schedule for the entire month by visiting any of our social media channels. We hope to see you. Welcome back. Our next guest, oh my gosh, I have so many things to say and I'm going to try not to cry. She is a wonderful human being and I hope that at some point you get to meet her, but I'm going to guess that at some point in your life, if you've been watching Autism Live, you've been touched by some of the work that she has done. She's been a great teacher to so many of us. She's a wonderful mom and a clinician and is good at so many things that it's hard to pin down one thing that she's good. Like, we had so many things that we could talk about during this hour. We're going to talk about as many of them as we can fit in. But she's just brilliant. And if you ever have the opportunity to be in the room with her when she is interacting with one of our kiddos or teens or adults on the autism spectrum, it's sparkly. It's just, you just know you're in the presence of greatness. I have to say, I don't know that I've ever met anybody who is as patient and kind and loving and as good of a teacher as Jennifer Yakos is. So let's welcome her. We're going to talk. This is Jen Yakos, an amazing BCBA, an amazing teacher, somebody who trains a lot of people. And I consider myself in some ways one of those people because I've always benefited greatly from the kinds of things that you do, Jen. So I don't think that I say it enough, but you're amazing. And I'm so grateful to know you.
Shannon, that was lovely.
I'm weepy. But how long?
Well, the feeling is mutual, 100%. It is mutual admiration society.
There we go. But I don't deserve it. The other day when we were doing our live show and we were telling Dr. Grampuchet that you were going to be on, she was like, oh my gosh, she knows so much. And said, you know, we were trying to figure out how many years you've been working at CARD. How many years have you been at CARD, and how many years have you been in this field?
Well, I've been with CARD for 29 years, almost 29 years. And yeah, that's pretty much when I started in the field. I started in the field as a senior in college, and then I started my work with CARD pretty much right away after I graduated. So,
and maybe it's worthwhile for people to realize the breadth of what you've done, to talk about some of the different things that you've done at CARD, because, you know, back then we called them therapists, but now we call them BTs. So you started out at that sort of entry level. Why?
Yes.
What was it about this field that you said, okay, I want to get into this?
You know, I immediately was touched with the hope that it provides for our patients, our clients, and their families. And I just, you know, I obviously fell in love with the families and the children, but I also just fell in love with ABA because I had never experienced that type of, I don't know, it's just that the tremendous power that it gave us to impact lives, and, you know, seeing how effective it was, even in just teaching the smallest skills to a learner, I just immediately was kind of taken aback by how effective it is and was, and the impact that we could have to help children and their families. So yeah. It was immediately, I kind of knew within the first couple of days that this is what I've been called to do. So I know that sounds a little corny, but I knew right away, and I fell in love with the kids and the families. They were just incredible, inspiring. And I knew that's who I wanted to work with, and I wanted to help as much as I could. But, you know, I was also in it for selfish reasons because I enjoy just being around them so much. And, you know, the families and the kids, they're just so inspiring. So
I'm going to try not to cry through this whole interview, Jen, but I don't know if you know how soothing and inspirational and hopeful that makes those of us who have kids on the spectrum, because I try to say this to people who work with our kids all the time. You know, we've been made to feel by other parents, by other professionals, sometimes other family members, like our kids are an inconvenience at best. And, you know, somebody told me that my child was a monster, and clearly he wasn't and he's not and all those things, but it drags you down as a parent. And to hear that someone as lovely as you got excited and feel selfish about getting to work with our kids, you can't know how much that means to those of us who have kids.
Well, it's absolutely true. I think, you know, I get such joy, and we just have so much fun, you know, working together. And truly, like, I, especially, you know, working as a therapist or a BT at the very beginning, I made really close relationships with the families. And I was just so taken aback by the love and the sacrifice and the hard work and the dedication. And again, the hope that so many families have for their child, and the hope that ABA brings. And so sort of being a part of that and celebrating the big victories and the big moments, but also the small victories. You know, I still remember when one of my very first clients that I worked with said his first word in front of mom, and mom was just in tears. And, you know, and so it's those moments that I kind of feel very selfish that, you know, I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of that growth. And the, you know, really the kids and the individuals are just so amazing. So smart, so resilient, so brave. So yeah, I, I get just as much out of it, if not more.
Well, on behalf of all of us, on behalf of all of us, please be as selfish as possible, because it leads to so many wonderful things. That's why I said, watching you be with one of our kiddos, whether it's a little kid, a teen, or an adult, it's sparkly. It's special. You know, you're in the presence of something really amazing. So you started out as a BT, and I want to keep saying that because sometimes families say, oh, well, they put a brand new BT on our case. And I'm like, sometimes those BTs grow up to be Jen Yakos. It's amazing how that happens.
I started out as a BT, and I worked.
And then what?
So I worked strictly as a BT for a couple of years, and then I sort of became a senior level BT. And then I started to do some training. So I would train the new behavior technicians that came on, and then I moved into supervision. So then I started actually doing sort of case consultation, case management here in San Diego. And then also I started to do what we used to call workshops, which is where I would go and I would work with families in different parts of the states and even abroad a little bit. And you know, do training and set up their ABA program. And then I would, you know, go back every couple of months. We would do updates over the phone. This is before Zoom or anything. Yeah. And we would be sending, you know, files back and forth in the mail. And so I did a lot of that type of supervision, locally and then remote. And then I did office clinical management. So I worked and I managed one of our California offices for several years. And then from there, I moved more into sort of a training position, where I primarily focused on training new supervisors, BCBAs, parents, professionals in the field, teachers. And so that's sort of what I've been focusing on mostly now for probably almost 10 years. So.
And you have helped create some of the amazing video training over the years, that's at CARD and at IBT. We've talked before on the show about the Institute for Behavioral Training. Mm-hmm. I mean, you made incredible things happen in a very short period of time that people are still using, which I just can't thank you enough. And then I remember very particularly, there were two times, well, maybe three times that our paths got to cross and I got to play a little bit in your sandbox for 10 seconds. And one was when I first came to start what we eventually called Autism Live, because it was this thing that was sort of morphing around and doing stuff. And I was asked to do videos with autism experts about different topics. And we sat down in a room with a camera and you for one day. And I just sat there and listened to you. And it was like my face fell off. Because
we have a totally different memory of that, because I just remember anxiety and being terrified.
It was fun. I'd like to travel back in time and you probably, you know, part of the anxiety was that I wasn't giving you enough feedback, because I was just like that the whole time, because we were interviewing a lot of great experts. I don't want to in any way denigrate the other experts that we were doing. They just didn't have the facility that you had to sit in front of the camera and talk and get it done. Like, you were the one take wonder that I would just throw questions at you and you would answer them. And the guy who was filming, he's like, yeah, we got it. And I was like, all right, moving on to the next thing, where that one take with anybody else would have taken all morning.
Wow. That's very kind of you.
Well, no, that's the truth. And the things that you were saying, because sometimes with some of the other experts who shall remain nameless, but who are brilliant, but sometimes I was having to go back and say, okay, but how would you explain that to a parent? Whereas you explained it and my mind was going the whole time. I was getting things that I'd never gotten before. So that was truly, truly wonderful. And then occasionally I've gotten to take part in videos with you, which has been lovely and delightful. But then the next time that I really got a new appreciation of how amazing you are was when COVID hit.
Mm.
And I was doing a thing with CARD where once a month, and I'm doing it again, where once a month there was a parent educational meeting where we would talk about different things. But during COVID, when in the first couple of weeks, the centers were all closed and people were figuring things out and the families needed something right then. And so I was asked, could the PTA be live every day at 5 o'clock? And for months, we were live every day at 5 o'clock, and you were a regular, and you were the regular that people asked for more than anybody else, because you kept coming in and having, okay, I remember one talk, you were like, okay, here are 14 things you can teach at home. And people were taking notes like their life depended upon it. It was a lifeline that you gave all of us. And I was so impressed with you. And I kept feeling guilty because I kept asking if you would come back like on a regular basis. And you had a lot of other – everybody was overtaxed during that period of time. People were working 80-hour weeks. And I kept saying, can you come back and talk about this? And you were like, yep. And you always had resources and you always had a PowerPoint and you explained things in a way that we could all get it. So I don't know that I've thanked you enough for all of that, but you are an amazing, amazing resource.
Thank you, Shannon.
So I asked you to come on, but it was, we both kind of went back and forth about the million and 18 things that we could talk about. But it's like, there's almost too many things to talk about. So where should we start? What has been on your mind lately in terms of dealing with parents? And if you say one, then I'll say one. because you know, well, it's a hard road for parents.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. It is really the uphill hike that it is. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so again, you know, I, as a clinician, one of the things that I always really impress or hope to impress upon families that I'm working with is honesty and communication. You know, I am here to hear it all and to be whatever support I can be, and hopefully the best support possible. But we don't get to that level of support and really being able to help you and your child unless we have that willingness to be honest and to communicate. And so now, as I'm training new BCBAs or BCBAs that are currently working with families, we spent a lot of time talking about compassionate care. We spent a lot of time talking about meeting caregivers where they are and trying to make sure that the caregiver always understands that they are the focus, that they are the ones that are setting the agenda and setting the priorities. And then we need to take our cues from the caregiver and design what we're going to do and how we're going to help them around that. Because, you know, we can come in with the most grandiose plans and ideas. But if it's not practical for a parent to use at home, if it's not meeting the needs that they want or need to have met, then it doesn't matter. You know, it just doesn't matter what we do. So really trying to help caregivers and BCBAs establish really open lines of communication where it is all about, it's a safe space. It's a place where, you know, we can be honest with each other. And if what I'm offering you or if what I'm suggesting isn't going to help or isn't going to be what you're looking for the caregiver to feel comfortable and secure and have the ability to just say, you know what, I really think that's not a fit for my family, or that's not really what we're dealing with. Because if I don't have that level of understanding, then we're just spinning our wheels. So I really try to encourage BCBAs to, you know, go in and try to help caregivers feel comfortable and confident expressing where they really are and that, hey, we're here to help you. And so I don't want a caregiver to ever feel intimidated or feel you know, that they have to just sit and sort of let the expert come in, because that's not the way it's going to work. So really focusing on that compassionate care and establishing those open lines of communication, I think, is really the foundation for everything.
I love that. Maybe we could talk a little bit more about, because compassionate care is a hot button topic right now. And I think people interpret it to mean lots of different things. So talk with us about what compassionate care looks like to you.
So compassionate care really, I think, applies to caregivers, you know, in our relationship with caregivers, and realizing that, you know, a caregiver and their child, they're the experts in their circumstance and in how effective things are for them. And so the measure of really good treatment is not necessarily what the data shows, but how much is this actually helping the family? How much is this actually helping the child, the individual, the teenager, and their family in real life? And so compassionate care really shifts that focus to the caregiver and the child and their needs. We're talking about trying to utilize strategies to embrace the family's needs and to be supportive, to do our best to get to know them, get to know their personal circumstances, use maybe, you know, layman friendly language, help them be involved in the decision making, help them to feel part of the treatment, trying to use center priorities around things that are important to them. And really do our best to sort of actively listen to the needs of our families and to demonstrate compassion in our interactions with them. So I know there's a lot of people that kind of talk about compassionate care and assent, which I think are two very different things. But compassionate care just means to me that we're seeing the families and the people as human beings and as individuals who, you know, have thoughts and feelings and emotions and beliefs about their treatment and need to be seen and heard and involved in a compassionate way. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's just sort of what comes to the top of my mind.
We just want to make more of you, because it makes perfect sense. And I want to give just an example that comes to mind that I remember many, many years ago. A mom of a kiddo who was a teenager who was nonverbal. And I remember the team was working so hard to get to functional communication, because that, you know, obviously functional communication, I feel, is like a human rights issue for everybody to have the ability to communicate what they need. And the team very rightly was very concerned about that. But when I remember talking to mom, and I asked her, I always say to parents, what's important to you? What's important for this kiddo? And the two things that were on her list were that she wanted him to be able to brush his teeth alone. And she said the thing that she dreamed of and said, man, if I could have this, it would mean everything to me, is she had a big family. She wanted to be able to go to a restaurant and have her son, who was on the spectrum and had some pretty significant challenges, to be able to sit at the table with everyone else, because, you know, they had to do one of two things currently at the time. One was that either somebody had to stay home with him and they didn't take him to the restaurant, and that meant that two members of the family weren't there, or they would go to the restaurant and they would take turns and one person would be assigned to him, because he would get up and run around the restaurant and try to take food off of other people's tables. So one family member would have to be running interference with him, which meant that two people from the family weren't at the table. So this was the be-all, end-all wish list for mom. And I remember going back and talking to the BCBA and saying, did mom ever tell you that these are the two things on her list? And the BCBA said, no, and I feel like I've asked. I feel like I really asked, and she comes in and we talk about the functional communication. But I remember it was so empowering for the BCBA to go, I can do those two things.
Yeah.
And they went and they got him to brush his teeth by himself. And it took more time to make the restaurant thing happen. But that eventually happened. But because the mom saw that those two things were a potential, she worked harder at the functional communication. Now that suddenly seemed attainable to her, where what was interesting was that none of us realized that she didn't think that that was a possibility.
Yeah.
She really had decided that that wasn't going to be a possibility. So she wasn't even wishing for it. And I, and I love to remind to parents that when we have the opportunity to work with BCBAs, and especially BCBAs like Jen, but Jen's training BCBAs to be like her, that we have that open communication that she was talking about just a second. We have to be willing to tell them and trust that you're not going to think it's weird that me saying my whole life dream is that my child can sit in a restaurant with the rest of the family. I can't imagine that you would ever think that that was a weird request.
No, not at all. Not at all. And so much of what you said is very true, I think. And that's what I try to educate BCBAs on, is that, you know, unless sometimes, you know, we have caregivers that are very much an open book and will tell us everything. And then we have other caregivers that are more private, more reserved, and that's their right. But we sometimes it's just about asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And I think, like you said, that a lot of times maybe caregivers just think that something's never going to change. This is just the way it is. This is how it's always been. And so you even kind of stop thinking about it. You just take for granted that that's how that behavior or that event or activity is always going to go. And so it's not even on your radar to mention it, right? And so teaching BCBAs to ask the right questions. One of the things that we're really trying to encourage right now, again, because I think when COVID happened and the world shut down and then we reopened, you know, there's sort of this shift of where treatment takes place. And a lot of times it takes place in a center or in a clinic. But we really have to make sure that we know what's going on in your home, know what's going on with your family, know what's going on with your child, and how are they interacting with brother and sister, and how are they doing when you go to the grocery store or restaurant. So we've been really talking to our BCBAs about making sure they do home visits, making sure they do community visits. And, you know, because a lot of times I think we don't see what's truly going on with a family unless we actually go and we see it for ourselves. Because again, as a caregiver, you have so much on your plate. You have so many things that you're trying to balance. There's just no way to possibly communicate with somebody else who's not seeing it and not there what's truly happening. And so sometimes that outside eye of the BCBA might notice something that you've just been living with for a really long time. And the BCBA might see it and be like, hey, you know what? Is that something that, you know, that you would like us to address? Because we can absolutely help you with that. We can help you with, you know, shoe tying, or we can help you with hand washing or making the bed, or, you know, whatever the issue is that you're having at home. Because those are things that are very attainable. And in the most situations, those are things that we can absolutely help you with and can make a big difference. You know, every family has different priorities and values. And so we want to know, what are the things that are going to make the most impact for you? What are the things that, as a mom, are going to make your life easier in the day to day? Because that can then have this really amazing sort of ripple effect on all these other things that we can improve upon. So, you know, one thing I do also want to say is, I know as a parent, it could be very scary and intimidating to have somebody come into your house, because I'm the one that's guilty of, if I'm, you know, I'm always embarrassed about, oh, my house isn't clean enough, or this is going on, or, you know, and I absolutely can see how a lot of caregivers would feel that way. But, you know, we are coming in to help and support, and there's, you know, we really try to put our caregivers at ease, because we've seen it all. We've dealt with it all. Chances are there is no behavior, there is no issue that we haven't already seen over and over and over again. We're not there to judge. We already think that you're an amazing parent just because of the fact that you're here and you're present and you're involved. So, you know, but that I think is a really important piece of what makes an ABA program really meaningful, is making sure not only what we're teaching in our treatment sessions are generalizing and actually happening at home, but also so we can figure out what other things that maybe we're not seeing, but that you're seeing on a regular basis, can we address and help you with? And that's going to make a big impact for your family.
And it's so interesting because I'm on the other side now. I, you know, my son completed his treatment, but I still have memories of things. And now I talk to parents and they'll say something and it comes right back up. And I was talking to a dad yesterday who said to me, he said, it's the weirdest thing. He said, I feel like I constantly have to explain, even to autism experts, that, you know, keeping things the same is what's best for my child. And he said it once and then he said it again. And I said, oh, but hold up just a second. Because yes, we like consistency. Consistency is wonderful. But if it's rigidity, if it's that the child has to have it this way, or they're going to have a meltdown, or they can't function, then that's something that we have to very slowly and compassionately start to address, because we don't want that child frozen in time. But I will tell you something. I didn't understand this as a parent. I can remember the day that we had gone on a community outing, and I really hope that you guys are utilizing this, where you go to places that you want to go with your child in life, and where you want to learn how do I handle things, and your child learns how to handle things. And I remember exactly where we were. We were in Pasadena at the Pasadena Civic Theater, which is a big theater, and there was a big, you know, like clown bazaar and everything, and my son had a helium balloon. And we were walking out and the helium balloon started to slip, and I'm sure it looked, and we had a behavior technician with us, and you know who this person is. You know, my husband, if you had a camera on my husband and myself and my son in this moment that the balloon started to slip, you would be like, what is this behavior? Because we all were like, no, no, no. And made sure that the balloon didn't go away. And my son was all concerned about it, and like we tied it to him and tied it to me. I think we even tied it to my husband. We were like, the balloon is not going anywhere. And our behavior technician who was with us said, is there a thing around helium balloons? And I said, oh my God, if that would have gotten away, we would have lost the rest of the day. He would have been hysterical. We can't allow that to happen. And he immediately said, well, that's something we should work on. And I was like, no, we're not going to work on that. Yeah. Are you crazy? Like, why would you want to deliberately traumatize him? And he was like, no, of course I don't want to deliberately traumatize him, but I'd like for him to be able to move forward in his life and understand that if a balloon gets away, it's not the end of the world. And I was like, you're going to get a bunch of balloons and let them go and make him do like, my head went to all of these places. Where I was like, that's going to be cruel, that's going to be mean, that's going to be whatever. And why would you work on it? Let's just make sure they never get away again. I will say that that behavior technician said, how feasible is that? Mm-hmm. Look at the fear that you guys all just exhibited. Like, is this your best life? Is this your child's best life?
Right.
So we did, absolutely, in a very slow and compassionate way in the house, let go of balloons and had a bunch of balloons so that if one got away, because we had a very high ceiling in the house, if one got away, we had others to deal with.
Right.
And to the point where, you know, obviously my son, you know, doesn't even notice if there's a helium balloon, whereas before it would have been full on meltdown and I would have had a panic attack to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's not about taking that joy of helium balloons away from him. It's about teaching him how to cope with real life when, unfortunately, the unexpected did, or, you know, thing is going to happen. And so, yeah, there's a fine line, right, between keeping things consistent and predictable and having a routine and having a structure. All of those things are good, right? Because we all probably appreciate some level of routine and structure, and young children really,
they
thrive in having some structure and some predictability. And so there's benefit to that, but you have to then make sure it doesn't veer too far to the side of rigidity and being unable to cope and manage when life inevitably is going to throw a wrench into your plans. Yes. Right. So, while this is funny, because this is actually one of the things that we have been training our supervisors a lot on, is finding sort of that happy medium between having structure and predictability and, you know, routine, but allowing for flexibility, allowing for, you know, the natural learning to occur, and making sure that we prepare our learners for the fact that, you know, life doesn't always go the way that you want it to go, and that's okay. And that, like you said, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. And so that's where we come in, and we teach lots of emotional coping strategies. You know, we teach them to identify their emotions. We teach them to use their language so that they can express what they need and what they want, and they can have some level of control over the environment. A lot of times what we find with learners who sort of exhibit a lot of rigidity in their behavior and have a hard time coping with change is that the more we can give them control over appropriate things that they can control, right? We teach them the language and the ability to self-advocate so they can tell us what they want to do and what they don't want to do. And we honor that. And then once they're able to use those skills, then we very slowly will start to kind of push the envelope a little bit, right? So then we start to prepare them for, you know, something that maybe they have to wait for, or something that doesn't go their way. And that when that happens, here's all the things that you can do, and it's still going to be okay. And these are other things that are going to make you feel better. So there's a lot of work that we do with emotional regulation, coping strategies and calming strategies, teaching them that, you know, the world isn't black and white, right? Like, just because you didn't get your absolute favorite snack doesn't mean that there's not five other things that you could enjoy as well, right? And so preparing our learners for the fact that life is not going to be always perfect and not always, you know, go along that very set structured routine, because it's life. And we don't live in a vacuum, right? And so we want to help our learners and our families develop skills to cope with those changes when they happen, so that you don't have to live in that fear, so that you don't have to be sort of a prisoner to it, where you can do things outside of that routine because you have learned those skills that are going to allow you to cope and self-advocate and get your needs met. And so that is definitely something that it's very important to find the balance and prepare learners and families for, you know, kind of living in the real world where things aren't always going to go as expected.
You know, one of the biggest questions that we get asked a lot is once parents have made the decision that they're going to do ABA, they ask a lot about how do you know you're getting good quality ABA? And over the years, I've started making a list of like hallmarks of when you know you're getting good ABA. But you just made me realize that one of the good hallmarks of ABA is what you do when the child is having emotions. Mm-hmm. And I know that sometimes in the beginning, it's very hard for parents. I remember one mom saying to me that my child was crying and that the behavior technician was talking to my child, but they didn't pick up my child and hug her and give her a lollipop and tell her it was going to be okay. And the mom felt that was very cold and very mean. Mm-hmm. And And I said to her, I said, I want you to like go sometime and see the whole way that they deal with the emotion, because could you hear what the BT was saying to her? And she said, no. And I said, the BT was probably saying to her, I know you feel sad that that didn't happen the way you wanted to. And it's okay to cry about it. And it's okay to feel this way about it. But what would you like to do next? And that at no point is somebody saying, stop crying.
No.
Right?
Absolutely.
That is not a part of ABA ever. And I know sometimes people misinterpret it and think that it's cold. But in fact, I mean, I don't know how you were raised, Jen, but my parents, who were doing their level best with what they had been trained to do, if you started to cry, it was get over it. Suck it up. You know, stop your bawling. Don't be a baby. You were shamed. Right. And that did not help me. That now I look back and I go, I was upset about something, you know, and I would love to have been allowed to feel my emotions, but not have it be that somebody coddled me during that emotion so that I went, oh, from now on, when I want my way, what I will do is sit here and cry.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's sort of a very hard question to answer, because how you handle those situations is going to be entirely different, depending on, the function or the reason for the behavior.
So yeah.
The individual's ability to cope and to use other strategies, right? But absolutely, like we put a very large focus about, you know, it's not at all about stifling emotions or not acknowledging emotions. In fact, so much of what we try to teach our patients is to label their emotions, and to be able to tell other people about how they're feeling. It doesn't mean that we're always going to be able to honor what they want or to change what we're doing because of that emotion, but we teach them that so that they can identify for themselves and identify for others. I'm angry, I'm upset, or I'm happy, right? Because then that gives them power, and that gives them the ability to get their needs met in other ways.
Yeah.
So, we spend a lot of time teaching, as I referred to earlier, skills such as emotional regulation. So teaching our patients, when you're upset or angry about something, let's look at things that you can do that help you get past that emotion, that can help you deal with your feelings in a more constructive or healthy way, right? So when I'm feeling upset, and I need to take a break and go for a walk outside, and that sort of resets me, then that's what we're going to teach them to identify and ask for. If we try to individualize it, because we know that what's calming or, soothing to one person is going to be completely different, you know, for each person. So, that has to be a huge piece for many of our learners, because they do struggle with emotional regulation and, dealing with those hard emotions. And so the last thing we want, a child or a learner to feel is that they can't express their emotions.
Yeah.
That's not at all, you know, we may, again, not be able to give them hugs and fix everything for them, because we don't want to reinforce those negative behaviors. But instead, we're teaching them, here's a better way for you to express your emotions. Yes. And here's a better way for you to get that comfort and get that calming in a way that's gonna, you know, be more successful in the long run for you, and not dangerous, and not put yourself or other people sort of, you know, in harm's way.
You empower them. And I will say this, I've been able to see, you know, what that looks like when it was taught to a 3-year-old who's now about to be 21. And he's so much better about coping with his emotions and telling me, you know, when he's the one that at 11 said to my husband and I, when we came home after being out too long and not eating lunch and it was hot outside, he was like, we're all tired, we're all hungry, I think we should relax for a moment and eat something before somebody says something that they'll regret, at 11. You know what I mean? So
that's
it's a beautiful, and incredible. I was like, oh, that is what I'm feeling. I'm hungry and hot and tired and I'm crabby. Yes. And I couldn't have labeled that for myself, but he helped me to label that. So I think it's amazing what you guys do. Unbelievably, Jen, we're out of time. Like that flew by. But I want to welcome you to come back whenever you want, because that didn't even scratch the surface of what she could talk with us about, you guys. You're just a wonderful person. And I'm so grateful that what you know and what you do has had such an impact on my life and on so many other people's lives, Jen. You are amazing.
Well, very much appreciated, Shannon, and can say the same thing about you 10 times over. So I would love to come back anytime.
Okay.
You just let me know. And
we'll pick a topic firmly before we do it next time.
Exactly.
But this worked out
well. I hope this was beneficial. I don't know. I just felt like we chit-chatted the whole time.
It was beneficial, I think, to a lot of people. It was certainly beneficial to me. So you're amazing. Please don't wander too far. We'll have you back. All right. And please give your whole family a hug from me.
Will do.
All right. You take care. That was the wonderful and amazing and just beautiful and charming autism expert, Jennifer Yakos. And we're out of time, but I want to tell you guys about what's on tomorrow. We're getting close to the end of the month now here for April. So on tomorrow's show, for the first time ever, we are welcoming the Romeos, Abby and Christine, her mom. You guys know them from Love on the Spectrum US. Abby and her significant other, David, were a huge part of both season one and season two of US. She's the one who got to go, well, I don't want to, spoiler alert, but you should have watched it by now. They go to Africa. And I think it's one of the most romantic things I've ever seen and just loved it. And Abby is so much fun. We're going to talk with her about mermaids. We're going to talk to her about lions and lionesses and some of the hats that she is making. And we'll talk with her mom as well. So that will be super fun. That is tomorrow morning. Then on Monday, we're going to close out the month of April. Vince Redman is going to be here with us. Vince and I have worked on and off together for the last 10 years. He's a licensed marriage family therapist. And we're going to talk a little bit about the stressors that come when you have somebody that you love on the autism spectrum and you are trying. The stressor doesn't come from them. It comes from trying to be the best possible ally you can be to that individual that you love. So we're going to talk about how we cope with our emotions and our stresses. That'll be super wonderful. And then on Tuesday, last day of April, Dr. Graham Pichet is going to be back with us, and we are going to talk about building language. What are some tips and tricks that we can be doing to be building language at home, in the car, at the grocery store, when you're driving down the street, when you are working on homework, when you're making dinner, because every waking minute is an educational environment, and we could make it an enriched educational environment. So we're going to talk about building language every way we possibly can. That will be on Tuesday, and that will close out the month. Don't forget that all of these shows that we've done throughout April are available to you right now in podcasts. You know, tune in and watch or listen. You can watch on YouTube, listen wherever you get your podcasts. All right. We are going to be back tomorrow with Abby and Christine. I've had the wonderful opportunity to talk to Abby before, and she's so delightful. And her mom and I, we didn't realize this, that her mom and I knew each other way before we ever considered having children. And ever before we realized that we were going to have kids on the spectrum. So that's a whole funny as well, how we reconnected over Abby being on Love on the Spectrum. So US. So tune in tomorrow. You'll hear the whole 411 about all of it and get a good laugh. Her mother is the reason why I do red carpets. That is the reason why I do red carpets. She was the very first person I ever, you'll want to hear why I once stuck a microphone in her face and pretended that she was on a red carpet in the Denver airport. Now, have I piqued your interest? Yes, we're going to tell that story tomorrow. So that and more. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now.
If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates. And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time.